Hey everyone, welcome back. Welcome back to the Letters and Layers podcast, your award-winning podcast for all things books, mental health, wellness, life lessons, streams of consciousness, and everything in between. This is your host, Amaka. It is Saturday, February 28th, when I am recording. I had quite the eventful last week and a half, I guess. The latter half, not as much, because just kind of coming down from everything. But my husband and I threw our baby shower last weekend and pretty much was getting ready for it like the whole week prior. I had guests fly in as early as Tuesday. A friend of mine came with her teenage son and he was on like school break. So they made a week of it here in Chicago. And most of my guests, most of my out of town guests came Friday and Saturday morning. And yeah, it was a success. I'm very happy and relieved to say, because I was getting a little stressed with the planning. I personally don't ever want to plan an event again. And if I have to, I'm hoping I have the funds to hire support to plan. But honestly, in this case, I'm just so thankful for the community that I've built in Chicago and the dear friends that I've made who just kind of threw themselves into the planning process with me and were there for me leading up to the shower and day of, and like still going out and buying things like an hour before the shower, and just so invested in the success of the event at the same level that I was. And it meant so much to me. So yeah, it was great. It wasn't too big of an event. It was between 45, 50 people. I would say about 30 to 40% were family and friends from out of town. And then the other folks were community, local community, friends and co-residents that my husband works with, and then friends of mine. Honestly, I would say probably more. It's probably a higher percentage of out of town, because I have a lot of out of town family that were gracious enough to take the time to come for this event. So yeah, I was so happy to have been on the other side, because it's super nerve-wracking when you're like, you have to think of all these little details and they all matter, and you are the point person and you just want it to come together so beautifully. So I'm glad that was the case. I have plenty of pictures. What I'm thinking of doing, I'm definitely going to make a physical album. I wanted to get some clips for like a vlog, but that was the last thing on my mind. I got plenty of pictures though. So what I'm planning on doing is filming a third trimester update video, and then I'll probably put pictures in that video. So yeah, baby shower is in the books. People were so gracious with their time, with gifts, with advice. And I will remember that day fondly. So yeah, kind of been coming down from that, because I feel like my life was paused that week. I felt like I really couldn't do much except plan for the shower. I was still working, but like pretty much any spare moment, I was out buying things, picking things up, you know, following up with caterers, like all this stuff. And then still kind of like recovering, quote unquote, from the shower. Sunday, Monday, I think this past Tuesday is when I kind of felt like completely back to my baseline and back to my life and being able to kind of tend to things that maybe were on the back burner for a bit. And yeah, now I feel like I am almost, if not completely, caught up and just have to kind of keep the momentum going because I have about 4 weeks left before I go on maternity leave, which is wild to say. I remember when I first told like my professional team, like my colleagues and the organization that I work for, so that, you know, one of the jobs, I talked about this in my first episode of the year, how there's one job that I'm leaving, and I gave that notice early January. So I can't believe it's already been like over 8 weeks or almost 8 weeks. So yeah, time is going. And I am 36 weeks. Am I? I'm starting to blur the weeks because I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast too, but the timeline that my medical team is following versus the timeline of my last menstrual period is there's a disparity of about a week and a half. So I am on the conservative end. I am 35 weeks today, entering the 35th week. And then on the more ambitious end, as far as the baby's timeline, I am entering the 37th week on Tuesday. So yeah, we'll see where he falls as far as when he decides to come. He could make his debut probably as early as the last week of March. And then, you know, if he decides to wait a little longer, maybe the first week. I'm hoping he decides to come like that first week, anywhere from the 30th to like the 7th. But that's one of the things about labor and delivery and birth. Like, you just, unless you have like a scheduled induction or a scheduled C-section, you kind of really don't know. And then even then, like, you can have that on the calendar and then the baby can just decide to come sooner. So yeah. That point of uncertainty I have had to settle in, because if you have listened to this podcast for however long, you know that I'm a planner. I like to forecast things. I like to plan ahead to the best of my ability while still being flexible. So I'm just trying to kind of embody that spirit still of kind of, you know, going with the flow, having a loose plan, but not being too strict or rigid. So we'll see. If, you know, there is a podcast publishing day where there is no episode, know I had the baby. Just know I had the baby and I could not record. Because if there's anything I have worked my butt off for, is to be consistent with this podcast. And there has never been a time in this journey where I did not stick to my schedule. Or I didn't post something on the designated days. So if something happens and I am not able to announce it beforehand and there is no episode, just know I had the baby, like maybe like a day or two before and just couldn't. And then I will try as quickly as possible to get back into my regular schedule. But yeah, that's pretty much it as far as personal updates. I finished Matriarch yesterday, February 27th, as promised. Got pretty down to the wire. I wasn't able to read for a few days because of baby shower planning, but thankfully I did a lot of my bulk reading of the second half of the book before then. So I only had about 90 pages left this week. So I cleared that out and I'm very happy to have been able to keep my promise. Very glad that I finished this book. For the most part, it carried me through. There were a couple of chapters. The chapters tend to be on the shorter side. I would say a longer chapter might be like 10 pages. A shorter chapter might literally be like 2. There were a couple of chapters where I felt like I had to like push myself to finish the chapter. But for the most part, the book carried me through to the end. And I'm not going to talk about everything. I couldn't talk about everything, even if I wanted to. There's just so much that Miss Tina touches on, as far as her life. And I'm sure, like, it might not even scratch the surface. I'm sure she gave us, like, a lot. Like, the tenants as far as, like, her childhood and her adolescence and young adulthood and, like, becoming a grown woman and meeting Matthew Knowles and having Beyoncé and Solange, and then, like, just them as a family having to work to stay connected and make sure the fabric of their foundation as a family is not compromised or doesn't break down because of the pressures of the entertainment industry. So I wanted to highlight a few things that I appreciate Miss Tina for, you know, as far as what she shares in the book. I think it's really great that she was not a stranger to therapy. I don't know where her perspective around therapy, or maybe she mentions it in the book and I just don't remember, but I just remember her saying, you know, she put Beyoncé and Solange in therapy early because maybe she saw a little bit of, not a rivalry, but maybe like an unhealthy competitiveness in a way that may have been brewing. And she did not want her daughters to kind of be at odds with each other, especially since she saw talents in both of them and knew that they would need each other. So she put them in therapy pretty early. And, you know, therapy is not a situation where you're going to get all the answers or you might even be entirely receptive. I feel like Beyoncé and Solange had their own different responses to therapy. But the fact that they had that exposure at all, I remember Miss Tina mentioning in the book that Beyoncé initially wasn't receptive to Solange's suggestions when they were still in the early stages of their career in the whole girl group era. Like, they were super young still, like teens, maybe like early teens. So there was some contention there between the two of them, but with therapy, Beyoncé started to warm up to Solange being present at like their practices and rehearsals. Beyoncé started to come to her sister's defense if like other members of the group or literally anyone else was maybe talking down to Solange or telling her she didn't know what she was talking about. Beyoncé started to listen to Solange if she had suggestions for, you know, how to make things just kind of flow better as far as performance and singing and what have you. So if there's nothing else that therapy gave them as young women, as young girls, I think just kind of being able to see each other in a different light. Beyoncé being able to see Solange in a different light. Solange not really feeling like she's competing with her sister, more so that they are on similar but still very unique paths of artistry, and that ultimately they are better off being in each other's corner and supporting each other in their own spheres of success. So I really appreciate Miss Tina for that. And she herself later on started therapy. I don't know if that was her first time in therapy. I'm trying to remember if she was in therapy earlier in the book. I don't think so. But she starts to mention therapy more so around the time when she divorced Matthew Knowles and was really struggling with that decision, because she was off and on with Matthew for years. And I think it's easy to judge Miss Tina and be like, girl, like, why did you waste your time with this man? Like, he was perpetually cheating on you. He did not regard you. You know, he put you through this for decades, honestly. He would come back. He would beg. He would plead. And you would just acquiesce. I think it's very easy to kind of put on, you know, sit on a high horse and like look down and be like, that would never be me. But I'm just like, and I gotta be honest, I feel like I had to catch myself from doing that as well. You know, women, we would like to think we would never find ourselves in this situation. But honestly, I can't judge Miss Tina for the journey she went on as far as her relationship and marriage to Matthew Knowles. It sounds to me like really the major problem she had with him was his infidelity, which is a deal breaker, like a huge one. But I think it also has to do with kind of having a generational perspective. Miss Tina, as of the end of this book, is 70 years old. So she might be like 72-ish now. So she's squarely in the boomer generation, if I'm not mistaken. And I just feel like their perspective around marriage and long-term relationship is different from millennials and Gen Z. Just kind of sticking it out and giving multiple chances and doing it for the kids and trying to keep things stable and putting yourself on the back burner and not considering your feelings, not putting yourself first. Just kind of all those schools of thought when it comes to a situation like this for a woman her age could be a lot of the things that she was thinking about, whether consciously or not. I also wonder, would it have been so hard to extricate herself from her on-again, off-again marriage / relationship with Matthew Knowles if they didn't have all the external context around the larger-than-life entity that was Destiny's Child? And later on, Beyoncé as a solo act. Because not only were they husband and wife, they were business partners. And the business aspect didn't just start with the kids or with, you know, Beyoncé and Solange and Kelly and Michelle and the former members. It started when Beyoncé and Solange were kids, like when Miss Tina launched Headliners and Matthew was right there helping her, you know, kind of get the business off the ground. So they have been intertwined financially and in a business sense almost as long as they have been husband and wife. So I feel like that's a piece that really needs to be taken into consideration, because it's hard enough to separate your life from your partner if you're trying to divorce and become single again. It's hard enough to do that when you're not in business with that person, or they are not your professional, or you don't have a professional relationship with them. So talk more now of not only are you romantically linked with this person, but you are professionally linked with them and your business is intertwined with them. It's going to just be that much harder, that much more difficult. So, and then you just, you know, you really can't say, she describes in the book how like they kind of had this pattern of theirs. They would have this like 5 or 6 month period of blissfulness as a couple, almost like being back in the honeymoon stage, and then things would kind of settle a little bit, and then it would get to the point where Matthew would step out again. And then Miss Tina would say, this is it. I've had it. This is over. And then Matthew Knowles would come back begging and pleading and say he's changed. He's gone to therapy. He's never doing it again. And she would take him back. even after he had a child with another woman and honestly was embarrassed because she did not know, the media knew before she knew, even after that, after a particular amount of time, they still found themselves back together. It was honestly later, even after that, Miss Tina finally decided to, for real, once and for all, end the relationship with Matthew. And she said it was the hardest thing she ever had to do. I think she was like 58, 59 at the time. She alludes to this in the book too, about part of why it was so difficult is because she just could not see a world where she deserved new love or different love that did not involve what she had been through, and that maybe she was too old to even want that for herself. She was too old to think she deserved that for herself. So, you know, Matthew was there. She had this history with him, long history, from when she was early 20s, maybe, to getting married, to moving to Houston, to having the girls, to going into business with him, starting Headliners, the girls, you know, developing a career, a following, and becoming as big as they were. He was always there in some form or fashion. So it was that much harder to completely remove herself from that relationship. And, you know, like I said, it's so easy to be like, that wouldn't be me. And I'm just like, you don't know. She is in such a unique position as a woman that many of us, majority of us, don't find ourselves in and will never find ourselves in. And no matter how long it took her, I commend her for eventually finally doing it. And it doesn't mean, even with everything he put her through, it doesn't mean that it still wasn't difficult for her. She still needed support. She still needed her community around her to kind of get her through that time. So at the end of the day, I'm just happy for her that she finally was able to get to that point where she could separate herself permanently and not look back. And then she meets Richard Lawson a few years later, I think, and they get married. And they're together for a while, a long time. She mentions in the chapter where she decided to end the marriage that they had been together for 10 years. And I think at about that time, she was like 68. So, you know, this woman has been in two major long-term relationships. And that's more than a lot of women can say, because she, you know, she was saying how people were commenting online about how she can't keep a man. And then she wrote, like, the next sentence was like, but I was with one for 30 years and then another one for 10 years. And I'm just like, well, yeah, different circumstances to both, but essentially still true. I think I do commend Miss Tina for realizing sooner with Richard Lawson that the end was near. And it doesn't sound like, based off of how she writes these chapters, when he is in the picture, it doesn't sound like she went through too much of a back and forth for a long time the way she did with Matthew. It sounds like, you know, she tried to kind of express how she felt for a while, but maybe it was not leading to the outcome she was hoping for. Because at the end of the day, you want to live happily ever after with your partner. You don't want to separate. But I think for her to get to that point and not be as wishy-washy, for lack of a better term, as she was with Matthew, I'm happy for her with that, you know, to be able to be like, it's been this amount of time. I'm no longer happy the way I deserve to be. And I think we should part ways. It's so easy to judge other people's relationships. But even with everything that she has shared in this book, I'm sure there's still a lot we don't know, you know, And we're not supposed to know. It's not our business. She was pretty open as it is with this memoir, which I appreciate. Another thing in the book that I would be remiss if I didn't highlight was almost toward the end, where she shared that she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she shared her experience with treatment and with, you know, kind of what to do and how to navigate this whole new challenge with her doctors. And I actually want to read that section in that chapter, because I don't think I personally can convey the emotion with just describing it. Because I think she gives a lot of really great insight into what Black women can be subjected to in the healthcare system. And it honestly, to a degree, doesn't even really matter what your socioeconomic status is. It happens to all of us. It happened to her. It happened to Serena Williams. And it has happened to many others. So I'm going to read, it's chapter 53, Reading the Margins. And I'm going to read right when she finds out that she had breast cancer and she just told Beyonce. Beyonce lined up one of the top breast surgery specialists in the country for me to get a private consult. I already had an appointment with the hospital breast surgeon for the coming Monday and the hospital oncologist Tuesday, but this private doctor would be able to see me the Friday before. I decided I had been too passive. I'd waited to hear from the doctor to even get a mammogram, and it was on me for not following up. Then I waited to get my biopsies, convincing myself that if they thought it was a big deal, then they would be more on it. I had to be my own advocate. So the two options were in my hands, the private practice breast surgeon or the hospital surgeon. I liked the energy of the surgeon at the private practice right away, reassuring but open to my concerns. She told me about two tests she liked to give patients pre-op to plan on the best course of action. One was the mama print, which would use breast tissue to show the type of cancer I had. It will show if you are dealing with a poodle or a Rottweiler, she said, adding that the tests could be run with the existing tissue from my biopsy. The other exam was relatively new, a Signatera blood test that would show if there were other cancer cells in my body. At the Monday appointment with the hospital surgeon, I told her I wanted to have the two tests. We do the mama print after the surgery, she said, because it has no bearing on the outcome of our decision to do surgery. We use the tissue that we take out during the surgery. Well, I want to, I said. I want the test before and after, and I'll pay for it. She conceded, but there was something about the way she said, if you insist, that rubbed me wrong. The next day I went to the oncologist, but she did not agree to me having the Signatera blood test the specialist had suggested. In fact, she said most people wouldn't even want to know about the results of the blood test. You'll just be stressed out waiting for the other shoe to drop. That's up to the individual, right? I want to know. Oh, so you want to know if you're going to die of cancer? Well, that did me in. She tried to recover, saying it would only lead to patients worrying. But as I continued to ask questions, that insensitivity colored everything. She predicted that I would not need chemotherapy, but would definitely need radiation. 5 to 10 treatments, if I was lucky. In fact, she said I would be on a hormone blocker for 5 years, nullifying any natural estrogen my body still produced. She wasn't receptive to my questions about what that would mean for my quality of life. According to the hospital, they did this for everyone, which struck me as a cookie-cutter approach. It didn't sit right with me, and it's only as I write this now that I realize why I'm so triggered by doctors who speak with the voice of God. When they shut me down or dismissed my valid questions, this brings up childhood feelings of being helpless with doctors. I feel vulnerable and at their mercy, not listened to, even at this age. I left her office so depressed and confused. That night, I talked to the CEO of Sacred, explaining to her that I would be working around the surgery. Grace told me one of her friends had gone through the same thing, and that when she had the tumor removed, they also did a breast reduction. Now she has some 35-year-old perky boobs. When Solange called to check on me, I tried to keep it light, repeating what I just heard. Yeah, and now she's got these young perky boobs. Well, Mom, that's your silver lining, she said. You always wanted smaller breasts. It was true. There were so many looks I couldn't wear because of my double Ds. I called the private practice surgeon to make the suggestion, but she said that a breast reduction would be a good thing because then they wouldn't have to be so precious about removing the cancerous tissue. I made my decision. I wasn't going with the hospital surgeon who talked down to me. I went with the private surgeon, the woman who gave me options and hope. She recommended a different oncologist at the hospital, one who she thought would be a better fit for me. That is the lesson I want to share. Even if I had gone with the hospital surgeon, I could have asked for another oncologist. A lot of people, especially Black people, feel they have to go with the doctor they are given, even if they are not treated well. You deserve second opinions, and it's your opinion that sets the decision. Yeah, I honestly felt angry for her that she went through this. And I did not understand why that hospital oncologist was pushing back when she said she wanted the Signatera test, because I'm just like, it's no effort really on your part for her to have this test. She wants to have this test. This is her decision. She will carry the burden of the outcome in whatever way she chooses. I don't understand why you're making it hard for her. So I can definitely understand her disappointment and just frustration with that provider. The fact that it can feel like in the medical system when you're seeking care that you don't really have much of a choice when the doctor walks in. You know, whoever comes in is who you see, and there's really not much choice in the matter is not always true. In fact, it's very often not true. There are options. There are choices. The thing, though, is you have to be your own advocate, like she mentions. You have to know that you can see someone else. You can decide to go with a different clinic or a different practice. You could decide to seek a second opinion. You can want additional tests. Like, these are things that you can ask for. And these are things that you can question why they maybe are reluctant to do it. Like, there are options. And oftentimes it's presented like there aren't. But unfortunately, this is where we as patients have to do our own due diligence, because no one is going to tell us. But I think having Miss Tina include this in the book was really important, I think, in hindsight, because the people that read it and see what she went through and see kind of the decision process she underwent, hopefully will empower folks who maybe know folks or they themselves are in a similar situation, and maybe will have a little bit more confidence in asking certain questions or, you know, wanting certain things and vocalizing that in a way that maybe they wouldn't feel so confident before. So I felt strongly about not only describing that part of the book, but just honestly reading it word for word, because it struck a chord. And I wanted whoever is listening to this episode to hear that part too, because it's so important. It's important for everyone, but I'm thinking like Black women specifically, as a Black woman is the author of this book and is sharing her experience. So, yeah, there's not much else I want to share about the book, only because, you know, I still want folks to be able to read it. There's so much I didn't even talk about, like all of like the behind the scenes with the growth of Destiny's Child and Miss Tina's role. Like, that is a huge part of this book. Her childhood, which I touched on in part one. Like, there is so much. There is so much. But this episode cannot last forever. So I just kind of wanted to share the parts that stuck out in my mind the most. But I enjoyed the book for the most part, I would say. I think if I were to rate it on a scale from 1 to 10, I would give it like an 8. It's a good book. It's a good book. I think I struggled with my momentum because, like I said in an earlier episode, I was reading this when 107 Days came out by former Vice President Kamala Harris. So I wanted to read that ASAP. And I did, but then I struggled to kind of get back into this book. But once I did, especially when I kind of used the podcast as accountability to say I was going to finish by the end of the month, that it wasn't hard at all. So it's a great memoir. There's a lot to learn from the older generation. And I think we as millennials and Gen Z and younger really need to be more aware and appreciate the knowledge and life lessons that they are more than willing to share and impart on us. You know, obviously kind of apply it in the way that makes the most sense to the world we live in now. But at the very least, you can use her story as a cautionary tale in a way for certain things that she dealt with in her life that maybe you would want to respond to or deal with differently. But there are a lot of things that she did well. She was the foundation of Destiny's Child. She was always there for her kids. And when I say kids, I mean Beyonce, I mean Solange, I mean Beyonce's cousin Angie, I mean Kelly, Blue, Rumi, Sir, Titan, Noah, like all her children and grandchildren. She is truly the matriarch, you know? And I appreciate her sharing her story, so. Thank you guys for listening. As always, I'm going to end the podcast here. As always, you can reach out to me at podcast@theLettersAndLayers.com. Oh, excuse me. You can reach out to me, contact@theLettersAndLayers.com. If you want to DM me via Instagram @theLettersAndLayersPod, follow the YouTube channel. If you have any thoughts, questions, anything you want me to give my 2 cents on that you don't mind me sharing on the podcast, don't hesitate. Last episode, I shared an email I got from a listener that was just so encouraging. And, you know, it's part of what encourages me to keep going. So yeah, thank you guys so much. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you are still listening, I appreciate you, and I will talk to you in the next one. Bye.